podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donny Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock.
Come on, Tottenham.
Hello and welcome to episode 16, season 12 of the Fighting Got podcast. Down the line, we're joined by Spooky. How you doing, mate?
I'm okay. I'm all right.
Yeah, I'm okay too. And Mark Nesbitt, yeah. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate.
You okay?
Yeah, just about.
But I mean, like, how do you process defeats at the moment? Like, not at the moment, just generally. Do you sort of get caught up for days in an end, or is this something you kind of process quite quickly? Do you let Spurs' imperfections and poor performances impact your life significantly?
I think it's easy. Oh, sorry, guys.
You go first.
Yeah, you know it. Royalty first.
Yeah. Been here 2 fucking minutes, jumping all over your spook. It did sound like, to be fair, it did sound like I was asking Mark Spook. So you
yeah, it did. That's why,
man.
You know what?
I think Spook is just pulling his dick out now.
Yeah.
He's slapping me around. Good little member.
Go on, Spook.
Sorry, mate. It's been a while since I've been on. I'm eager. I'm too eager. Being at the game allows me to get over it a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Because when you're at home, you're watching it on TV, which I know most people do that. It's the detachment is almost instant at home, right? But it kind of isn't, because you're in your own home.
Exactly.
So everything that's happened, everything that you've watched, you can't really get away with it. Whereas, you know, I kind of sat in my seat, waited for everybody to kind of pile out of the upper tier. Then I made my way down to Beaver Town. Bardi was there, T was there, and you kind of then just work through it. And it's, to be honest, we barely spoke about football, and it kind of pulls you back into this reality that, don't worry, there's another game in a few days' time.
Yeah.
And another opportunity. And I know this is just basic football 101, right? There's always another game. There's always another game to, you know, whether you're on a good run or a bad run, you know, there's redemption around the corner. At least that's the hope. So I think I'm okay, because by the time I get home, I'm done. Even though if I get home, there's anyone there, I'm like, look, guys, I don't want to talk about football. Just leave me alone. I'm going to just distract my mind completely. And even today, I'm kind of like avoiding certain things. And it's just a process, isn't it? We all have different ways of. It depends on the performance. It depends on how we lost. You know, the Newcastle performance, and you know the end result was not fucking great. So I was disappointed, and still am.
I was having this conversation on Thursday last week after the Man United game. It is one game in a never-ending cycle of games. We will never run out of games of football to play, and there will be times where things are not exactly how you want them to be, and there will be times where you're absolutely loving life. But this is just one game, one period of frustration, of which there have been many as Spurs fans. So just you know, look, what you mentioned, but what hit home for me is I watched it with my brother and my dad, and there were kids right screaming and shouting all over the house and stuff because they came over with their kids and that. But we watched it together, and while we were frustrated watching the game, me, my dad, and Ryan, my brother, as soon as the game ended, and then we had a little chat about it, but then we just sort of got on with just being with each other. And I think that's that, when you go to football, if you're not lucky enough to watch it with family, or you're watching it on your own, it's so much more insular and in your brain, and you're living it so much more when you're on the sofa on your own with no one to talk to. And I often think that's why the reaction on Twitter this week has been, especially today, and last night has been it has been significant for the first time, I think, in Conte's reign. And we're going to come on to all these, talk about all these things. But it was, and I think a lot of those people that are forced to watch it on their own. And they need to go to Twitter to have the conversation that we would be having in a pub. But because we're in a pub and you're face-to-face, the way you question, or the way you structure your questions or the conversations you have are much more nuanced and soft compared to online, where it's, you know what the nature of social media is it's you're like an exaggerated version of yourself. Everything that's painful is exaggerated on Twitter, because you have to wade through the never-ending tweets that are coming through, and you want your tweet to hit home. And if you're not in a situation where you have tons of followers, like most of us, like we're lucky to have after years of, you know, doing a podcast and stuff, you know, for some people they won't have that, they won't get that gratification of communication with other fans, and they find that when they are the most extreme versions of themselves, it's much more likely to get a rise. I think maybe I'm going a bit too deep, but I think
that's about right.
Yeah, Mark.
I think that's right. That's actually a perfect way to describe it, because I have about 14 followers on Twitter, and the other day I sometimes get caught out, and I do, you know, I do in my head go, I just, you know, I can be emotional, you know, I'm ginger and, you know,
right,
short, so I have, you know, I haven't been blessed in life, and you know, letting out
on
man Twitter of, is sometimes
a Viking heritage as well.
I know, right? Fucking, why do you think I left, mate? I'm surrounded by like 6'5" blonde gods and goddesses.
Yeah,
like, even the girls are bigger than me. Like, honestly, like even my little brother,
you're not even
up,
blonde,
was bigger than me.
Like
I'm nothing. I'm literally
The eyes of the Vikings, you are nothing. You are absolutely zero.
Wow.
I mean, that's taking it
probably a step further.
Like, I apologize. I've got to say what I feel. Yeah. Right. That's only fair. Yeah. Even if
this is your Twitter. Life is your Twitter, right? Yeah, you have like two. Maybe you have like the Fighting Cock as like your life friends, and you know, that's where you say all your outrageous shit, and then you don't say anything on Twitter where you've got like 70,000 friends.
Yeah, I think this podcast and Patreon's like safe place, and I can say what I want pretty much. But one day I will get caught. But the but what I'm saying, in the eyes of your ancestors, you're less than nothing. In fact,
you're gonna have to do a DNA test to find out whether, you know.
You fucking start. You know, granddad
piping
up over
it. Adds some, you know, you might find your heritage in some other little country, you know,
Scotland.
Just
Scotland, yeah, absolutely. You already know this.
It's the Scottish part is the alpha part of your DNA.
In the
Viking Empire, if that is what it was even called. You would be sort of carrying rocks from one place to another. That would be your job.
I think I'd be like Lord of the Rings, you know, the guy that like
Grey
sits
worm.
Next to the king and just Grey Worm. That's it.
Grey Worm,
just
yeah.
whispers like Grey Worm.
Grey Worm, Worm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Sorry, we'll stop insulting you. I apologise for that.
I don't even know how we got onto this.
Doesn't matter. It's
I know.
Funny.
I started out insulting myself.
Yeah,
you
did. Yeah. And then we jumped on it like bullies. Answer this question for me, Mark. Darren Fox. Right. He says, "Is the stadium built over some sort of ancient burial ground that was disturbed? That we disturbed, and we're forever fucked with bad luck, and the spirits of someone, whatever." Prick has cursed us with no trophies, or success, or happiness.
It does kind of.
Do you know what he means? I understand what he means. It kind of feels like all the other teams around us are clubs of our size. Even when they were sort of shit or not as good as they have been, or they became to be, won trophies in that journey. Like I was talking to a Man United fan called Adam McCullough. And we were talking about fallow periods, and he said, "Yeah, you know all about fallow periods." And I was like, "You're one to talk. What have Man United done?" And he said, "Even in our fallow periods, It's what Spurs fans would dream of having. And I didn't really have a comeback because our fallow periods are so much, or have been previously, so much more significant than any of the other clubs around us, the clubs of our size. Like, the same question gets asked of why was you ever considered to be in the Super League? Well, we generate the money that means it's attractive for a Super League, but on merit, they're right, we shouldn't be there. And I think that's what the frustration, where the frustration comes from. Like, it feels like we're cursed because Arsenal in the shittiest era of the last couple of decades that had won an FA Cup, something we'd dream of doing. And that might be where the frustration comes from. I don't know. Don't know what you think, Mark.
I can sort of see, thinking back now, you know, like what was some of the tougher periods to just use Adam's point there, like some of the tough, I mean, the Jose Mourinho years at Man United were awful, right? But in his first season, he still won the fucking Europa League. And I think, did he win the League Cup or something like that?
Next year, I think, yeah.
Like, it's not like we would die for that, but I'd fucking love a Europa League or a League Cup right now. Like, I'll take anything. We'd take anything, right? So, like, he's probably got a point, but you can't compare ourselves to Man United yet. Like, so that's not really he's punching down there, our Adam is. But yeah, look, I think that there's going to be a time where we'll look back at this time with Conte in charge and go, oh, you know, we were still building something. I still think there's lots to come. The Newcastle defeat was bad for a lot of people, but we can't get too fucked off with it because we'll throw away everything that we're still trying to build here. This is still just part of this process, and yeah, there's a bit of a fallow period, like you said. I think that's a nice way of describing it, but we can't shit our pants just yet. Way too early.
We're going to come on to all of that very shortly. Before we do, the Fighting Cock is sponsored by NordVPN. Last week we talked about a way to use NordVPN to access Satanta Sports in Moldova. You can get loads of football, Champions League, Premier League, La Liga, UFC, Europa League, all the football basically, for the price of £3.49. What we said wrong last week was, it was correct, but you have to use Lithuanian server to access, when you sign up for Satanta Sports, you select Moldova as your location, and then you can get all of the football for £3.49 a month. I was told...
Oh, what a bargain. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's mad.
It's insane, isn't it?
Absolutely mad, and completely legal as well, which is mad as well. But it is legal. But what these companies sometimes do is change their terms and conditions so that while this might work for 6 months, it may in the future, they change things and make it not work. But then there's always NordVPN to access all the broadcasts around the world where it does work. But right now, that offer is there and you can take advantage of it. The quicker you do it, the more time it will be valid. To do that, grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/fightingcock. Get a huge discount on your NordVPN plan, including 4 months free if you pay up for a year in advance. It's completely risk-free. If you don't enjoy it, you get a 30-day money-back guarantee. So there's no risk. And if you use it right, if you can put a little bit of time into it, and it's really easy to use, but if you want to put the time into it and figure out where the best deals are, then you're going to actually save money. This is going to save you money by investing a little bit in a subscription to NordVPN, which is about a cost of a cup of coffee a month. Mark, do you remember last week I said to you that I knew more about football than you? Well, I'll ask you a question. Yes. Who knows more about football, me or you?
Yes, correct. Yes. Yeah.
And my question at the start of that podcast was, why are we so much better in the 3-5-2? I never want to see a fucking 3-5-2 ever again.
Good. I mean, I think also, I hate to let you think that you're right on anything, but I think I said this last week.
I was right at the time.
I honestly think I just don't think the players are necessarily. So do you remember when you were first going on about the 3-5-2 or the 5-3-2 as you called it? And I went, yeah, but you know, he's playing a 3-4-3 because these are the players he's got at his disposal. We need a few new players to fully function in the 3-5-2. Fucking hey presto, who knows more about football? Mark Nesbitt. Because we don't quite yet have the players for a 3-5-2. We just don't. We don't necessarily have the midfield players, and our wing backs, who are, if anything, even more important, are just not
playing very
what
well.
They're not good enough. They just look. I actually didn't think Emerson was as bad as a lot of people were saying yesterday, and you know, I just don't. And the stats back that up as well. I thought Sessegnon was awful, but I also think Sessegnon will need longer to adapt to things. We've seen that in his Spurs career. He needs time to adapt. Emerson took to it slightly better. The man still can't cross to save his life, but he didn't. This was not a terrible game for him. He wasn't. You know, it's what they're being asked to do. They're just fundamentally not the wingbacks that he wants them to be. And we still need a little bit more creativity and someone that can take a man on in midfield if we're going to play a 3-5-2. I think Kulusevski will be good in that position in the middle because he's one of our only players that can beat a man. Son can, but he looks a little bit devoid of confidence at the moment. I'm not quite sure. So, look, I don't think you should stick on your hill, stick to 3-5-2, but we need January to come around, and then we need summer, and we need, you know, 150-200 mil again in the summer.
Yeah, I agree. Spook, before I come to you, can you just check that your input on Discord is your mic and not your laptop? Just check. It's just a little bit low. It just doesn't sound quite right. If it is, then don't worry about it. We'll figure it out after.
Input's right.
Yeah, it sounds much better now. Really?
Okay.
So you didn't change anything?
Yeah. No.
Oh, it sounds perfect now.
Well, weird.
Oh, well, yes, there we go. Engineering on the go. What are your feelings? Is they've got to be similar. I think it's the midfield spook that potentially is the issue in having defensive three of Bissouma, Skip or Højbjerg and Bentancur, while they both have their roles and are good. I think over the two games that we've just experienced, it's clear that the creativity is lacking somewhat, and the service to Kane and Son is stunted perhaps by that trying to aim for that solidity in midfield. Like someone like James Maddison ahead of Skip.
There's absolutely no doubt that we're missing like a creative spark, right? Someone who can just play a ball that isn't just part of an automation, part of a transition, part of what Conte gets these guys to deliberately do to recycle the football and kind of keep possession and whatever else. You know, we know what Conte's football's meant to be. We know how it's really functional and pragmatic, and you run into a certain place, certain position, and you receive the ball, and that's how you create opportunities, just through those supposed automations, except we don't do enough of them to really be as effective as we could be. I didn't think our midfield was that bad against Newcastle. I think to kind of echo I was going to call him Matt. Sorry, Mark.
You did that on purpose. You weren't going to call me Matt. You're just saying, you're just fucking life, digging me out again.
Matt Nesbitt.
So the fact that we haven't got proper wing backs, right? You've got Emerson, love him. He's a good defender, but he's not a wing back. He doesn't have the offensive traits that we need. You literally, if you're going to get into a position where you're going to cross the ball, it needs to be delivered into a dangerous area that our players will attack. And that might happen once, like in a game, twice, you know. And he does a lot of hard graft to get into those positions, but he's just not effective enough. On the other side, Sessegnon, he can be really, really good. He can be really, really poor. And you can tell that he is a project. He's someone, you know, can we afford to have those type of players in the team? Well, that depends on where you think Spurs are at the minute, because I think that's, and we'll probably come on to this, I think that's where people are losing their shit a little bit too quickly, is I think that we're expecting everything to fall into place. And even I was expecting it to fall into place, to be fair. And it looks like now there's still a lot to be done. But I think we need something different in the middle. Just if you're going to play 3-5-2, we've got too many players who do the same type of thing, and probably, whether it's because Conte instructs them or whether it's because they don't have it in them, they're not as inventive as we need them to be. But just like a general observation, and I know people probably think this is just an easy way out. I think this season, even playing the way we've played, we could have accumulated even more points and probably even lost less games, although the last two were unavoidable just with the way we played. And that's off the back of the chances that we do create. You saw it yesterday. Son got into a couple of positions where he doesn't have that instinctive kind of just shoot and score. He like dithers in the moment, in the seconds, doesn't play it out wide, decides to dribble a little bit more, doesn't get the shot in, or gets a shot in and it's saved or whatever. He had an opportunity early on where I thought he was just going to kind of curl it into the opposite corner, chose the one nearest to him, I think. It was saved. There's something lacking. Even you've got Kane, who scored 10 times, right? And yeah, I don't think he's playing half as good as...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's something still about that synergy between the two of them. Like, we created a lot of chances against Newcastle. And they were just more clinical and ruthless, which is usually what Tottenham do. Like Spurs usually contain, counter, one or two chances, score, and then we do it again. But whereas we've gone the complete opposite now. We're creating opportunities. They might not all be clear-cut, but there just isn't that kind of like belief that it's going to end with us scoring. We make it really, really difficult. And people, again, you can say that's the system. You know, we don't have enough energy. We don't have enough spirit and tenacity. And you look at the way Newcastle were playing. Maybe we are reserved a little bit too much, but we get into positions. And I think our players fundamentally let us down, even the good players.
So yeah, Eric Dier was really poor.
God, he's terrible.
And obviously, Lloris is. I mean, for
a side like us, sorry to cut you off there, but who, and one of our things has been that we've been defensively sound this season, at least. You know, we've ground out wins and all that sort of stuff. We actually created shitloads yesterday. It was just Lloris 100% let us down. Dier was way off his game. I wanted to sell the cunt right after the game, which is harsh because, you know, he has been good last season and this season, but
yeah, he was terrible.
Fucking little, yeah, Greg Munching cunt. It wasn't great. I didn't think Sanchez was good, but again, I think it's a high ceiling for him. You can't expect too much of him. I thought the problem was Lloris at the back. He just didn't look confident, and I think that had a massive effect on our three centre backs. It was clear, painfully clear yesterday that if Dier's off the boil and we don't have Romero, we look really inept in defence. And you know, even though Sessegnon and Royale came back and had to help out in defence a lot, it just didn't look great. I thought Almiron's goal was good, but that was an individual piece of brilliance. And Longley was getting a lot of stick for it. I was like, fucking hell. I mean, Sessegnon didn't do great in that either. Yeah, Longley was the last man.
It was a 50-50.
And when Almiron's bowling in like into him, like full of confidence as he is, and he's playing well enough. Actually, you know, you've got to hand it to the boy. He's had a tough time at Newcastle, but then fucking Lloris's distribution and then his performance for the, you know, how he set himself for
to
that
kick
was
out,
not great.
Kick out and aim a sort of floated 50-50 ball to Sessegnon to try and win. Sessegnon in
and we 50, know Sessegnon's terrible in the air.
Like, he doesn't. He's not built to win 50-50s, right? So he's at a disadvantage. So it's not actually a 50-50. If your two players are going up and one of them is Sessegnon, he's at a natural disadvantage. So instead of doing something that was less, you know, that it was such a high percentage chance or a low percentage pass from Lloris. That it was inevitable that the ball was going to be turn over, and then obviously they scored a bit, and Longley got beat. But Almiron's on fire at the moment, and he's pacey, and he used every bit of his pace and skill to execute and get himself into a position where he can score. Lloris should have got down better, quicker, but the point that is less of the point. The point is, Longley was isolated because of the pass from Lloris. And I get that these are permutations and many things can happen to avoid those situations. But Lloris was directly responsible for us losing that game. And the pass out, you could say, well, you know, 9 times out of 10 they don't score from that scenario. But the one that the first goal where he came out and didn't do anything. He made no decisions. He made decisions to come out, which was probably correct, but he could have put his foot through it and it had gone anywhere. What he did actually was just stiff boarded, didn't he? He just sort of hit his torso, and then obviously Callum Wilson came in, and then he remonstrated for something that was there was never going to get that. It was never a foul. Like if that would have been chalked off for Newcastle, that would have been outrageous. I mean, I would have taken it and I'd have been happy, but that would have been absolutely outrageous. That was all his fault, and then he looked to the referee for protection because he knew he'd fucked up. And Dyer as well in that instance. I know Dyer did a lot wrong, but in that moment, he decided to remonstrate with the ref as well. What good are you going to do in that instance, remonstrating with the ref? Your job in that instance is to see the danger and do whatever you can to ensure that they don't score from it. And it may be that he would have never got back to head over or defend that goal. But don't use the time to start having a go at the ref the moment it happens. Get back, get in position, move, do something, do everything you can to prevent that ball going into the net. Instead, what your brain went to in that instance was, ref, that's unfair. When, as we saw in the replays over and over again, it wasn't unfair, there was nothing wrong with it, and they deserved to score. That was a massive bugbear and frustration for me. Ben Broadhead, he says, do you agree that until Lloris is placed, we have no hope of achieving any success?
That's well over the top. But
you've got to remember, he was our best player against Man United. A week, 4 days before, he was unreal. He's not damaging enough. The answer is no, we don't have to get rid of Lloris to achieve success.
Exactly.
Is the answer.
And like he fumbled against Arsenal, he fumbled against Newcastle. You can say, I'm not going to say I blame him for, you know, it's still minutes to be played after you fumble. It's not like you surrender all the points and you lose the game immediately having made an error. And goalkeepers, you know, you kind of do tend to focus on the mistakes for obvious reasons. And even more so because Hugo Lloris is such a great keeper and he's been with us for like over 10 years, that you're more likely to be critical, hypercritical of him and overreact. I don't know what the fuck he was doing. I don't know why keepers are calibrated in this way to have these kind of absolute system shutdowns, you know, in pivotal moments. I mean, I don't know if it's to do with the whole, you don't think about a shot that's coming towards the, you know, the goal, that you will instinctively dive and try and save it, right?
Yeah.
But when you've got time to think, for a goalkeeper, I guess it is quite pressured. And we've seen, you know, I think I've spoken about the demise of Robinson at Tottenham. You know, he was great and he was consistent. And then he just started making mistakes. He just could not stop making mistakes. And like, we've had a lot of poor goalkeepers, you know, in our past. Tony D famously called Bobby Mims or described him as having hands made of mist. Mistakes happen. Like our defenders make mistakes, and you don't, you know, Carl Walker, such a great player for Spurs,
yeah,
and for City, but people just go on about him having brain farts. And it's,
I remember that we had so many conversations about Carl Walker and his mentality, so many, and look what he's achieved. And it just,
so we do need a replacement, right? And Hugo's even aware of this. He kind of spoke about how he's going to help the club. And that's probably quite an important step, like having him. I don't know what Hugo's going to do when he finishes his career at Spurs. He'll probably want to fuck off for a bit before he comes back and potentially coaches.
Where did he come from? Lille?
Lyon, I want to say. But we're Tottenham supporters and we don't know.
I mean, who gives a shit? It's fucking... what sort of tin pot little French club did we buy him from? Can't even take French football seriously anyway, apart from PSG. It's all a joke, the whole league.
But yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? We've never gone out and bought someone who could be a proper understudy. We've always bought keepers that are never really going to consistently play, always towards the end of their careers, you know, or just average goalkeepers. We've never really looked at buying the next superstar or someone that can potentially be the next superstar. Definitely, like, we bang on about Kane and Son, right? How are we going to replace them? Goalkeeper is pretty pivotal to our long-term future. Not so much next couple of years, I don't think, anyway.
I think also, though, if Lloris, sorry to butt in, but if Lloris also wasn't our captain, I think it might have been an easier sort of transition. But he is he's a massive character for us on and off the pitch. You know, he's been there 10 years now. Been here 10 years. So it's kind of, it's going to be a big one to replace. And I don't think it's going to be an easy one. I don't know if we can do... I don't even know how the fuck they're going to do it. Because it's going to be hard to do a sort of a phased handover, right? Because immediately when you rotate / drop, it's going to be billed as a dropping, isn't it? Oh, Lloris been dropped to the bench and all that sort of stuff. That's going to be
but that's just bullshit narrative. That's just put people spinning things. I mean, the reality is the crown will have to be, you know, it's just like a changing of the king.
Yeah, it has to happen at some point. You can't not have it. Yeah.
And I just have to deal with that. I mean, it could be quite tricky. It depends who we sign. We might sign a very young goalkeeper who's already a first team player at a top club. Do you know what I'm saying?
You've seen other clubs. That there's no guarantee that's a success anyway. Like Chelsea's goalkeepers cost a combined £110 million, and they don't even know their first team goalkeeper is.
They're back to playing Kepa again.
Kepa cost €70 million or pounds. Yeah. I can't remember what it was. And then Mendy, who was supposed to be the second coming of Christ, now can't get a game. It's such a difficult position to play in. Even De Gea, through periods at Manchester United, was in
a rough patch.
Yeah, he did. Like, all goalkeepers do.
Yeah, rough seasons.
The only one, they did. And I guess the only one who's been consistent is Edison and Alisson. But
great defences.
Yeah, great defences and good footballers in their own right, and especially Edison. But Alisson can make two or three mistakes a season, and in those seasons, Liverpool are flying, so you forget about them pretty quickly. Mm. But with Lloris, when the frustrations are running high at Tottenham in the fan base, they are going to... His mistakes are going to be exposed, and in two really important games this season he has made them. He signed from Lyon to Spurs.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Do you remember the transfer fee in pounds?
11 million?
No, £7.9 million.
Oh my God! I thought it was more than that.
It was rising to 11 million pounds. If we won something, which he never has.
Bargain.
I mean,
it's all the master plan by Levy to save 4 million. £3 million.
If we can spend, in today's money, that's probably more like 16, 17 million pounds on a goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean,
as good as
10 years ago.
Yeah, as good as Hugo Lloris, then there won't be an issue. But yeah, there does have to be a change of guard at some stage. So it's funny because my Italian mate, who was watching some coverage of the Spurs game against Newcastle, said there was a slowdown. Obviously, there's a lot of attention on Conte in Italian TV. And there was a slowdown, and you could see of Conte screaming at Bentancur. And it was, "Where are you going, you stupid dickhead?"
What was this for? What game was this for?
The Newcastle game. Or maybe it was the Manchester United game. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think because I think someone mentioned this in a blog, because I don't think a lot of the journalism at the minute doesn't appear to be journalism. It appears to be clickbait blogging.
It's been that way for a decade, isn't it?
Yeah. It's such a non-event of a thing. Like, it doesn't... Who gives a shit? I mean, I'm sure he's called them a lot worse in the dressing room when he's been screaming and shouting at them. I think in the moment, I'm sure players are calling each other lots of things on the pitch as well, and they're fucking up. I don't think it's funny. I would love to see that, to be fair. And it just makes me laugh. But that's Conte. Do you know what I mean? Through and through, because he's playing
in his position as well. You'll bear that in mind. Is that exactly. Conte knows exactly what he would do on the pitch. playing in Bentancur's position, but he also has to realise that Bentancur isn't Antonio Conte. Conte was an elite midfielder. But, you know, in the same way that players hated training under Glenn Hoddle because he was better than them, you know, Conte... Mm. But they're not kids. They are paid a lot of money. Like, I know there are some areas of society that would say that you shouldn't berate one of your underlings in such a way, but football isn't a...
But they need to have thick skins, right?
But football isn't a microcosm of wider society. Like, if he can't handle... Not that clearly he can, but just fucking get on with it. It's not a problem, I don't think. Do you disagree, Mark?
No, I totally agree. You fundamentally cannot compare something like a situation in elite sports to normal life. They just don't compare. They're totally different
worlds.
Things. Different worlds. I mean, yeah,
Tottenham has an HR department.
The people that exist, they
for players
there,
for players
the club for the for players.
What would it be like? Support.
I think the culture is different as well.
There'd be a liaison. A player liaison.
Well, yeah. What would they do? What would they you know?
Well, he might go to his
take him to a workers' council or tribunal.
Could you imagine if Conte?
Bullying?
Yeah, well, this is it. I mean, it's ridiculous to suggest, but I think there's some people out there that would say that what Conte's screaming, calling him a stupid dickhead as an employee,
100%
would have an issue.
Lot, yeah, there's a lot, and there's a lot of our fans that would say that, and would really, you know, clutch their pearls and be outraged about this, but it just isn't. This isn't real
wimps.
Normal.
We call them wimps.
And he doesn't mean it. Do you know what I mean?
No. But listen, we've all done that. We've all played football or some other sport that we're into, and we've shouted at, you know, our opponents or even our teammates, like, fuck, just fucking mate, what are you doing? Why are you trying that fucking pass, mate? Mm. Like, we're 1-0 down. Just fucking play it safe, dickhead.
Dickhead.
And then you run off again, and it's fine. Mm. Like, what? That's,
I mean, to be fair, you need to stop interrupting me, you stupid dickhead. and I mean that. That's not me doing banter. No, I'm bantering, mate.
That
was a perfectly timed pause just after you said that. Me and Flav stopped laughing.
There's times where I've been watching TV and... I've been watching Spurs play, and I, in that moment, the only way I could describe feeling about a certain player was genuine hatred about my own player. Like, I would look at them and go, I hate you, and I wish you'd never, ever come to Tottenham Hotspur. That's how I felt inside. Then the game sort of finishes, and you realise that was a bit
emotion, that was
a bit harsh. I don't hate him. I don't hate anybody, I don't think, on earth. But in that moment,
super emotional, right? And also, him saying, where are you going? It's almost like, what have you been doing on the training pitch at Hotspur Way for the last 3 or 4 days? You know where you need to be in this transition. The fuck are you wondering for? Do you know what I mean? And this is the type of stuff that, you know, I mean, obviously people are going to say, well, if Conte is such a perfectionist, how did we lose against United? How did we lose against Newcastle? Okay, if football was that simplistic, we'd win every single game, right? We'd be invincible forever. It's just not, it doesn't work like that. So the fact that Conte's screaming some shit like that from the sidelines, he's getting frustrated. He can see what's wrong, and hopefully they can fix up and look a little bit more sharp in the coming games before the winter break, so we can at least be happy for a month before we come back to it in Christmas, I think, Boxing Day, or whenever the next game is after the World Cup.
This isn't in any way a correlation to who I was talking to about me hating, but has Harry Winks played a game for Sampdoria?
I don't think he has, unless he it's happened in stealth mode and no one has tweeted about it. But the last thing I read about him was that he was struggling.
Surprise, eh?
Yeah.
I mean, it.
Did not see that coming.
Man. Hopefully, he likes the food out there. I mean, I don't know what else. I mean, I wish him all the best, but we need one of the we need someone who follows loans. I don't know if we know anyone who does to update us on that, but I haven't got a clue.
Go and listen to the Extra Inch if you want to hear more about our online. Does Windy actually do that? Does he still do online update?
He seems to know. I think he has done, maybe on Twitter.
Okay.
Oh, Bardi was having a dig at you as well, Mark, at Beavertown on Sunday.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, he was just saying...
Why are you starting beef?
He was genuinely laughing and saying, how does that guy that you got on the pod, the new guy, doesn't even call you by your name, by the way.
Does he not know you, Mark?
Nice.
How is he rating Hobie? Like, how is he...
this is a good question.
Thinking that he's the best midfielder that we've got, et cetera, et cetera. Because you wouldn't have it. I think we were saying to him, we missed him. We could have done with him. He would not have made a blind bit of difference. And then we went down a rabbit hole with that for about 5 minutes.
Well, this is the thing, actually, Mark. In a way of answering that, coming back as a rebuttal to Bardi, because he will be listening. It is easy to forget that Romero and Højbjerg weren't in that side. And Højbjerg has definitely been our best midfielder. Maybe... I think if you had to... Actually, before Mark answers, Spooky, who's been our better midfielder for whatever reason, without going into a five-minute diatribe about it, Højbjerg or Bentancur?
Oh, my word. I think I would edge the Viking just... Bentancur, arguably, though, you could, without going into it deeply, you don't tend to think too much about his mistakes as much as Højbjerg, but the one has more finesse on the ball.
Why don't you think?
I think it's just the narrative around it, mate. If I'm genuinely honest, but the thing is, I'm not the most tactically astute kind of pundit on stuff like this. You know what I'm like? I'm more philosophical and more about the emotion of the game and what the players are doing, that visceral energy you get off players. And obviously, people would sort of talk about, you know, the Viking as. He thinks he's a Viking, kind of thumping his chest and like celebrating tackles, and it's like they kind of demean.
Why is that a bad thing? That's a positive thing.
But no, but the thing is that's not like that's all he does, for fuck's sake. You're not going to get that much done on the pitch if that's
all obviously not what he does. If you think that's all he does, then you don't know what you're fucking watching.
There's a lot.
Is that what you're saying? Bardi said.
He thinks he's a cement mixer. Like he doesn't rate him at all.
The thing is, it's just so. We've had these fucking chats for what 2 years now. Like it's just, you're just not going to convince. We're not going to convince Bardi that Højbjerg is one of the best defensive midfielders in the league. But he is. It's not. It's not opinion. You literally look at the stats. That apparently the extra inch love so much, and that they'll fucking show you. There's only Rodri's put up better stats than Højbjerg for this season. Fine, Xhaka's having a good season. Partey's having a good season. Casemiro is coming into it, but it has barely played. He's played, I think, 4 games for United. So it's not even just me sitting here with my Viking hat and my bacon slung over my shoulders. It's literally out there for people to just see if they can fucking look through their little gammon covered glasses and actually look at the stats on the screen.
Oh,
so anyway,
oh, man. Can I just say one thing?
Yeah. I'm not going to get lectured on who's a better player than the other from someone who rates Davinson Sanchez. So there.
Yeah, Bardi did actually say that Davinson Sanchez would be better than Bardi's
a fucking. Sanchez. He goes home and hugs a little toy with that he's just painted in MS Paint a little picture of Davinson Sanchez on and just coddles that and cries to bed.
Bardi won't let this go. You know this, Mark. You're entering a war with the Italian.
It's absolutely not a problem. He likes Davinson Sanchez, so
it's true. It does. It's hard to take his opinion seriously when he rates Davinson Sanchez as highly as he does. I think Davinson Sanchez is okay, but. You know, he's definitely improved. I thought against when he was under Jose Mourinho.
From a very low base.
Yeah. Maybe Bardi can come on next week if he's got time and defend his position. What do you think has changed? What has changed, Speak, right, from 12 league games ago when we hammered Norwich 5-0? Get it? Relegated Norwich, but the run up to that game was incredible, including a draw at Anfield, which we should have won because we played well enough to win. We beat Arsenal 3-0 at home. I know they had a sending off, but we were as good as they were against us. What could I know, we'll never know, because there are nuances to this discussion that are unfathomable, but there's too many moving parts. But is it
right? Let me try and box this up without rambling for 15 minutes.
Impossible, but impossible for you.
Mate, you wouldn't have me any other way, and you know that.
Mate, well, we've been doing this for 12 years. You're still here, definitely. But well, is what I mean, you do sometimes go, oh, fucking Willie, stop talking, fuck's sake.
Yeah, well, then you just have to interrupt me, mate.
Last season,
Conte inherited Spurs, right? And I know every single new manager is going to inherit what he's got there. And there's arguably managers that come in and they hit the ground running and the club's fortunes change. But arguably, most of those clubs do not have the pressure and the players, the quality and depth in the squad, regardless of your opinions about it, than Tottenham, like in comparison. But he's come in, he's tried to rework the squad in terms of fitness and conditioning and tactics, and it was stop, start. We'd win a few games, we'd lose, you'd get really irritated. But in the end, it all kind of clicked for what we wanted to do. And it worked in terms of the type of football. But you had Son and Kane on absolute fire, so it kind of makes things really easy. He's then got the pre-season that we all wanted him to have. He got the backing of the club, brought in a bunch of players. But obviously, people expecting these players to come straight in, and people get distracted with, have the players really improved us in any way? They don't look at the bigger picture. And that is, Conte now has to set the foundations for what he wants his team to be in terms of identity. That doesn't necessarily happen immediately. But again, we dumb everything down because that's what we do as football supporters, because we're so reliant on the high that football gives us when your team's doing well. And we exaggerate the lows to the point where we think it's the end of the world. Conte's simply trying to start from scratch. Now, people might say, just continue the type of football we played from last season. Okay, but maybe there was no longevity in that. What he's trying to do now is kind of build the Conte team, right? Mm. Based on the style and the identity that's associated with his football. The shit that he knows really well that's successful. But we've had several little problems. The form of Son and Kane together as a partnership, you know, the fact that, you know, we have brought in new players, but we've had injuries, we've had players that haven't bedded in quickly enough, and now they're only just starting to play. We've got the wing back issue, you know, we've got new problems that because of the standard that we want to be playing at, it's kind of elevating the things that are wrong with it. People might think it's all falling apart, but it's probably just amplifying where we need to be better. And you factor in best Prem start ever, even with the way we've been playing, even with the problems we've had. So, you know, you can look at it from two ways. I think what's changed is that we're starting from the beginning this season. And as much as we like using the stats from last season to illustrate how good our home form was up until the other day, you know, the reality is it started from scratch. And so you could say Conte has been our manager for 11 fucking games and we're third in the league and we've only lost twice. And we've lost at Man United, lost three times. Man United and Arsenal, where we never get much from those games. And obviously the Newcastle game, it just wasn't a great experience for everyone. So what has changed? Everything, but maybe nothing at the same time. Like, we want a rebuild, but we don't want the rebuild to happen at the pace that it needs to happen.
We want a rebuild, but we want that rebuild to just be winning every game and not see any kind of drab performances.
Yeah. And it's made worse by them locked down the road being top and playing
100%.
Like, fluid, flamboyant football. And I'm not going to talk about them in great detail, but you can look at them and say, well, it's taken them, you know, he's the 4 years.
This is the fourth year.
Arteta's been at Arsenal, you know.
And do you know how many calls for him to be sacked by their fan base? So many. All the evidence
is
online.
They were turgid. Mate, do you not remember how poor they were in terms of style? There was Arsenal fans talking about, I don't know what this team's meant to be doing.
Yeah.
Don't understand it. And it wasn't working. And he did what he wanted to do. He wanted to get rid of the big personalities. With Spurs, we're in a fucking good position because it is literally, by three or four players. I know this is like a major thing, to be fair, but you know, replace these two players and bring in someone in the middle, and everything falls into place. But for some reason, modern football now, and it's been like this for a long time, it's, oh, if it's not going to happen in the next couple of games, fucking bin it, start from scratch. People would rather start from scratch to get that initial high off a new manager than actually persevere and dig deep. Yeah. And I actually lost my shit at the home game. There were a bunch of supporters, like the booing at half time. I kind of stood up and I don't know who I was talking to. I just blurted it out. I just started like shouting loud enough for people to hear. Oh, don't fucking boo the team. Don't fucking boo them. What are you doing? I don't care how badly they play. And in the second half, like the supporters are getting behind the team again, and we score, and then they're proper behind the team. And I'm thinking, you fucking hypocritical pricks! Like it's I know it's really difficult because it's a pantomime, right? And I'm asking football fans not to be reactive, and this is the only way they can be reactive. But I would rather have like a bunch of supporters when the football's being played scream, "Wake up, you fucking pricks!" And just this kind of again visceral energy, this kind of like you're almost threatening them, but in a really polite way, and that often has the right effect because it's thousands of people kind of screaming at the team to just crack on and try and wake up, try and do something. But the whole booing thing is just it's like being surrounded by fucking children.
It's turgid.
I don't know, man.
There was a lot of that. You're right, and you don't like. I don't think any of us, certainly neither of us three, like the booing, are supportive of the booing. There was a fucking load of booing. I think maybe the loudest I've heard it at halftime.
This is what we take the piss out of Arsenal for doing and have done. I know.
That reactive kind of. Sinusoidal, wasn't it, Flav?
Yes. Sinusoidal. Sinusoidal? I don't know.
No, sinusoidal. Fucking hell.
Mate, it's a mental word that no one's ever heard of. You'd never even heard of it.
I've never heard of it before. You had to Google it. Yeah.
So what was it about?
So it's about, it's a description of the sinus curve. So something that constantly goes up and down and kind of swings up and down from the constant.
It was a poetic question that was asked on the Patreon preview. He called it bipolar sinusoidal
episode. Make it sound like suicidal. It's not that.
That's what it feels like being Spurs fans.
It felt like some of those fans. Yeah, exactly. Them fans yesterday were.
Right. Let's move on somewhat. But we've got Zeus here. He's asked a question. This is actually I think this is the most liked response to a request for questions we've ever had. 397 people liked a reply to our tweet where he said, "We're third in the league, first in our Champions League group, so why does it feel like we're in the relegation zone?" An 1882 Spurs, he says, "Some of our fan base deserve absolutely nothing. Wanting Conte out is utter madness. He's been with us 11 months and we are third and a win away from Champions League knockouts. The best league start in 60 years, but you only go so far with crap players like..." Davy Sanchez. I thought that was going to be really wholesome. Davy Sanchez. Yeah, but all our players are shit. Imagine, I don't want to go back to Arsenal, but some of their fans were saying, "Trust the process. Arteta has a plan." And now look, and he's 2 years ahead of where Conte would be at Tottenham. And Conte himself is saying, "I need two or three more transfer windows. Exactly. I need the money.
Stops saying that. He's always been saying that.
And there's some fans out there saying, "Well, you can't keep complaining about money, but the only thing that's going to get us to where we need to be is money. That's the nature of football. The only way to win, typically, is by spending as much or more than your rivals." And it's sad to say, it's a horrible position we find ourselves in, but we're lucky enough to have an infrastructure around the football club that will facilitate significant spending inside the squad. Like, imagine being fucking Stoke. No hope. Absolutely no hope. So, it's not as bad, man. Like, I get people's frustrations, but there's also an air of entitlement.
Yeah,
because we are a big club that we should be doing what everyone else is doing. Do you know how Do you know how impossible it is for us to win the league? It's really, really almost impossible. Like, Arsenal are absolutely flying, and will they win the league this year? You could not.
I doubt it.
Not
yeah.
in. I would bet my house on them not winning the league this year because of what Man City are. And you know, I've seen enough in those two performances against Leeds and who was it? Southampton. To see
T said something really great after the game. We were talking about stuff, and he was being like his classic depressive self, or kind of like, you know, we're shit, and he was no, he actually wasn't saying we're shit, but he was talking about we can't keep losing games, right? I think I'm sure he'll come on and explain this a little bit better, but you know, he's saying we can't keep losing games. Like, Conte will be under pressure if we keep losing games, which is fair. It's a fair comment, but it's not like we're going to go five or six games, you know, and not win a single one, because then if that happens, then something has actually happened in the you know, behind the scenes, right? It would be something chaotic that's playing out for him to lose the dressing room. But what he said was the reason why every game feels as bad as it does when we don't play well and we don't get the result is because we are looking high. We are looking at top spot, even though it's beyond our reach. So every game becomes like a cup final, which is great because it means that we think we can win every game, even though we don't win cup finals. But we think we can win every game, and we know how important every point is. And when we don't get those points, it hurts a lot more than a defeat 15 years ago felt.
Yeah.
But that's a good thing, because what it means is that we don't lose often. And then when we do lose, it hurts because it feels like fucking hell. But by the same token,
it doesn't mean the world is falling apart around your ears because we've lost a couple of games.
But I think the problem, right? I've said it before, we're not built for this type of pressure. So we are using age-old calibrations again and don't fit into what we're trying to achieve now. So when we do lose a game or two, people just tap out. And it's like, nah, it's falling apart. I don't understand the football. And they want to quit and they want to go back to something that they're comfortable with. We're comfortable with attractive football because it's entertaining. But ultimately, I've watched entertaining football at Spurs. Even in the 90s, there were instances where we were entertaining. But it hasn't equated to much. And we're trying to do something different here. We're trying to change the culture of the club and the way that we do things. And for our fan base, and it's probably a loud minority at the minute, but for our fan base to just kind of think, nah, mate, this isn't for me, and let's reboot and start again, I think is weak. I just think it's also weak. I think you need to dig deep. Everyone needs to dig deep.
I suppose as well, though, like if we're going to think about it at a more macro level sort of thing, like for people like Levy, to a certain degree, yeah, he wouldn't have enjoyed hearing all the fans fucking booing at halftime yesterday. But as long as he doesn't lose his shit, then it's just a phase. Do you know what I mean? Like, but fans are going to fucking piss him off. We've just mentioned Arsenal and how they lost their shit on so many occasions with Arteta throughout this quote unquote process, right? Klopp didn't have a good start at Liverpool, and a lot of the Liverpool fans gave him a lot more time. And yeah, you're right. We as fans, we need to give them more time. But I totally agree with you. I don't think we're conditioned to be able to give managers a lot of time at the moment, especially if we don't like what we're seeing on the pitch.
Fulfilling prophecy, yeah. Right? If we often say we can't control what's happening on the pitch. Yes, we fucking can. You know, you can turn the atmosphere at home games into toxic atmospheres, and that's when chairmen get trigger happy and make changes because they feel pressured and whatever else. And so this is my point. I don't think football fans are the same that we were when we first started going to football, and even, you know, earlier than that. I think it's the whole thing has changed. It's like takeaway food. People want everything delivered.
Do you think that's across the board, though? Do you think that's the same? Because I don't think fans of some other football clubs are maybe I'm interested.
No, I hear what you're saying, but
I think there are clubs that you know.
Right, okay. In a nutshell, okay, because I'm conscious of time and I could talk about this for fucking ever. Like, I think the issue...
actually tapped out, he's left the call.
I think the issue is I've lost my train of thought. Fuck's sake.
Never mind.
Fucking great. Can we just clap for you?
What are we talking about? I had a really good point to make. Oh, that's it. Right, self-deprecation. We have taken the piss out of ourselves for so long that now it's leaking into our reality and it's actually governing how we feel about what we need to be doing. So we know we're the perpetual pretenders. We've got to cup finals. We've got to the Champions League final, for fuck's sake, and we lost it. We keep knocking at the door. We never get through. So I think that does, and I respect it, it does play into the mentality of our fan base. I think we do genuinely think, fucking hell, when is it going to happen? And I think in my head, I think it's going to happen. It's going to happen once. It's going to be the greatest fucking thing that's ever happened, and we're not even going to worry about anything after that point. That's where my head is.
I feel like we've been saying that for about 9 years, though. Okay, all right.
What else are you going to say? Just fuck it.
Well, that's it. This is the way you can maintain an air of, composure, mental composure when dealing with this stuff. But as I would say, always go back to the same thing: is that we, as much as we're frustrated with Daniel Levy and maybe Conte's tactics and Pochettino's failures towards the end of his time at Tottenham and the Nuno experiment or whatever it might be, we're never far from a glorious moment. It might not be winning something, but we're never far from a moment that makes us feel like we belong to the best club on earth. And you just have to give Conte that there has been a kind of a growing minority of people on social media, and we keep referencing social media because it's something we're exposed to all the time, and it does impact how you feel about your club or impacts opinions you might have about
it
your club.
Shouldn't, yeah.
It shouldn't, but it's impossible not to. As a human nature, when you see a load of people saying Conte isn't right, and even like my own brother Ryan, he was saying I'm not sure about Conte, and I'm like, I don't know what you think we're going to get if we sack Conte. Like, what if you don't believe in someone like him and what he's done previously, and don't think that perhaps there are other issues that can't need to be fixed outside of Conte and won't be fixed just by changing a manager. And a lot of it comes down to style of play. But, you have to take the rough with the smooth and the ups and the downs and all that sort of stuff. And it's obvious way to approach poor form or good form. But no one, when we're playing well, is going, yeah, but, remember, this is good form and there will be down periods. When we're playing well, everyone's going, this is brilliant, this is amazing, Conte's a god. But that isn't the way football works. It is episodic. There are moments and times where things are going well and you should celebrate them, but appreciate that there will be difficult times in the future. And as I said at the start of the show, there's a never-ending line of games that we're going to play, and there's a never-ending number of players that you're going to see play at Tottenham Hotspur, and a never-ending number of managers. The longer you live, the more you will see, and it will the highest points you will feel will be equated by the lowest points as well. And that, for a club like Spurs, isn't relegation into the Championship or going down to League One like Sunderland. That, for Spurs, is where we're at now, which is last time we won a major trophy was 2000 and whenever it was, the League Cup. There will be fans out there never, ever win a trophy ever in their life. Never. They will never, ever even be close. 99% of the fan base in England or the clubs that exist in England will never be close to winning one of these four major trophies that we are at court. So just be grateful for the fact that we're in the conversation. We don't support Port Vale. And you know what? I think the people that are most angry probably would never support Port Vale if they lived in the Stoke area. They probably would have just gone straight to Man United. Anyway, boys, I think that'll do. We've done an hour. It was quite cathartic. And Spooky needs to go and do his podcast. Where can we find your stuff? How do we find your dulcet tones? If you like hearing Spooky talk loads about Spurs, then how do we find it? What's
I'm
your Patreon?
On Patreon.
Yeah.
So
what is
if you go to Spooky in Purgatory on Patreon, I do podcasts and blogs. And yeah, it's therapeutic as well, mate. It's, you know what I'm like. It's just like me.
Spooky is has been talking about Spurs for decades, and he he had
longer than most people have been alive.
Yeah, and dear Mr. Levy, which is Dear Mr. Levy, which is the greatest blog that's ever existed about Spurs on the internet, and now he does audio stuff. So if you like what you've heard from Spooky today, go over to his Patreon and support him. It helps him buy all the skag that he needs to stay on an equilibrium. And it will help him continue to produce the amazing content he does.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. What, the skag bit? Yeah. Mark, you've got the Hurdy Gurdy podcast. So if you're
that's right.
If you're speaking,
go on Spotify, search for Hurdy.
If you're a Danish speaker,
get it. Yeah, search for Hurdy Gurdy if you speak Danish. If you speak Danish, hi. There's about anyway.
How many Danish Spurs fans log into your podcast?
Probably about 40, 45 or so. There's not loads. Spurs is not.
It's too niche, mate. You guys just need to just record in English. Your English is better than the 99% of the people that listen
English
to
people. Yeah, I know.
Well, not most English people. I'm talking about the listeners of this podcast. Not, you know, we. I mean, actually, you're probably right. Who else is on there? You got what?
I think so.
You got Andreas is on there as well.
It's myself. Yep, the lovely Andreas Tau. He's got many hats on, Andreas has. He's a former journalist, now lives out in sunny Spain with his daughter. He's a great guy. And then we've got a rotating panel of other Spurs, Danish Spurs fans, obviously. It's great. And if you're Danish or Norwegian or Swedish, you might even understand it.
Lads, just recording. Recording English. Just recording English.
I know. Do you know
sorry, that was a burp.
So, I mean, Andreas speaks English most of the time. Andreas mostly speaks English or Spanish. But
so on your podcast, you've got Danish, English, and Spanish. It doesn't matter your niche isn't just... listen to me, your niche
is... Oh, hello, we are some Danish...
Yeah, that's not what you sound like.
Caught in English, yeah. No, that's not what we sound like. But
exactly.
Well, some of the others would. I love them, but they would.
Is everybody who comes on your podcast, can they all speak English? I bet they can.
Yes, 100%.
Then why are you alienating 99.9% of your audience?
It's our thing, isn't it? And we're also we're connected to, part of the official Danish Spurs supporters club. And I think a lot of our listeners would probably get pissed off if we, but to be fair, there's like,
you replace those listeners with English speaking listeners.
Yeah, you're right.
And what are they more or less, are you saying people that can't, understand.
They are worth more because they're Danish, so yeah, they're probably worth 10 English people per Dane.
It would still be worth it.
At least, probably 15. But yeah.
And are they aware of what kind of Viking you'd be? Are they
what
aware of that?
What do you mean by that?
Love that silence. Just
it lulls me in with all these interested.
I'm just asking.
What's it like? Oh, why would you do it? You're not a real person now, Mark. You're not a real Viking. Yeah. Your country's ashamed of you.
I don't think they'd be ashamed would suggest that they would be remotely interested. So ashamed is a strong emotion. It would just be they'd look at you and go, I feel nothing.
Why is he so small? Did his mum not feed him? Did he not breastfeed?
Yeah.
Did he not get that luscious Norwegian?
I bet in Denmark the average age of breastfeeding for a kid is like 12.
Fuck off. What?
The mums are putting their wappies out. Willy nilly. I reckon
wappies.
Wappies. What is that not? Is that misogynistic? I don't know.
What even is that?
Wappies, isn't it? It's name of boobs. It's like bazongas or bazookas.
Oh, this is taking a turn.
I reckon in Denmark, women are breastfeeding other children that belong to other women.
Imagine that, coming home as a 12-year-old and you know, you've got your mate with you and like, oh, you're staying for dinner. And like, oh, what are you making today? Well, I mean, I'm having breast milk, but you can have my dad, I think, is cooking a roast or something, but I'm just having breast milk. You're welcome to the other tier. I'm a single, I'm a single child. So
yeah,
the other one's a little bit, I was a bit pissed when I came home yesterday. So the one's like gnawed through a little bit. So you just got to squeeze it as you're sucking as well. And then it works perfectly.
Yeah. Exactly.
This is what the fuck. I hope no one's listening at this point.
Oh, they're 30% listening. They're 100% listening. We know this.
We're on the 30%.
We're on the 30%. Thank you very much, boys. And, everything will be fine. And we'll see you on the next podcast when Spurs are triumphant once again. Bye.
Coys.
Network.